Reading from the Jiva Dharma, Chapter 2. I'm not sure the page. It's right after this section where he talks about Mukta Vairagya, monkey renunciation. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sannyasi Thakur understood the deep significance of this discussion and made no further suggestions about changing his outer dress. Folding his hands, he said, Prabhu, since I am now your disciple, I have taken shelter at your lotus feet. I will bear upon my head whatever instructions you give without any argument. I've understood from your instructions that unadulterated Krishna praying constitutes the only Vaishnava Dharma. This love for Krishna is the Nitya Dharma of the Jivas, and it is complete, pure, and natural. What are the various dharmas that are prevalent in different countries? How should I regard these different religions? Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Naksu Mulitam Yena Kazbat Sri Gurudeva Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Rapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Pidamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripashindu Vayebhyascha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Jiva Dharma, discussion of the nature, function, or duty of the soul, which actually is the basis of all philosophy. What is our duty, which entails understanding who we are and understanding what the world is. So, so we know that this Mayavad sannyasi, personalist sannyasi, very advanced soul, but was influenced while meditating by seeing someone with prema bhakti. And he understood that despite his high level of attainment and renunciation, this is actually what he was hankering for. That's the nature of faith. It's an energy that can enter the heart of a fortunate soul and give that soul an experience of sublimity that inspires his path for the rest of his life. Vrinda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prashadi Pai Pati Lakadi. One is wandering from universe to universe, from species of life to species of life, until by the mercy of Guru and Krishna one gets the Bhakti Lata Bij, the seed of devotional service. It's the conception and experience. The deep conception and deep experience of the conviction that ultimate sublimity and the goal of life rests in serving God, which means surrendering fully to that will, which has greater authority and jurisdiction than our own individual petty selfish desires. Because we are part of something greater than ourselves. And the whole dictates to the part its duty, because the part is it functions a relationship to the whole. So this Sannyas Thakur somehow winds up in this beautiful place, Gojramdweep, a very isolated place in Mayapur, Navadweep, the nine islands of Bhakti. And meet this Premdas Babaji, who is a contemporary, a little bit after Lord Chaitanya, but a contemporary of his followers. Well, he may be the disciple of his followers, the disciple of intimate associate of Lord Chaitanya, called Pradyumna Brahmachari. So there's such a wonderful exchange, and he's asking about Dharma. And he gets to understand that the Nitya Dharma, the eternal duty, because it is the related to the inherent function of ourselves or our soul, the part of us that doesn't change, the real essence of us, who we are, and the function, its purpose, therefore its ultimate duty, is to love God. That's the ultimate reality, that there is an absolute reality, there is an absolute energy, there is an absolute conception, consciousness, being. And the ultimate reality is we're part of that being in an exchange of love. And that's ultimately what exists. That exchange. Maya chitad apastraya. Apashat purusham purnam. That absolute reality, God, Krishna, has energies. And there's an exchange of love. That's what we are. We are a receptacle for that potency of love that comes from God and flows to God. So this dialectic continues as this Sannyas Thakur is being enlightened, and he asks if the jiva is infinitesimal, how can his eternal dawn be full and pure? And he gave the example that it's full and pure when it is connected to its source, as a spark connected to the fire has the potentiality to burn the whole world. So the conversation goes on, and basically this Premdas Babaji explains that there's three dharmas, or a nitya dharma, a dharma that's has nothing to do with ourself, because it's not actually our dharma. It has nothing to do with the nature of the self. Then Vainitika Dharma, a duty that accepts God and accepts the jiva, but the duty is in relationship to the karmic or temporal body and mind. And there are duties in relationship to the temporary situations we adopt that help us purify ourselves to realize our eternal nature. And then there's Nitya Dharma, which is our eternal nature. Duties directly in relationship to the soul, which is Vaishnava Dharma, to serve God. And then, because he was an impersonalist, and they had this objective of Advaita Siddhi, an absolute oneness. He asked, what's the difference between that and Lahavav, which is the prema at its highest level. What's the difference? And sometimes you don't know the difference because you haven't experienced the goal yet. Anyway, he explains the founding nature, the founding acharya of this Advaita Vedanta, this conception that perfection is oneness and any distinction means ignorance. And he explains Shankaracharya's role in terms of the Buddhists, who rejected the Vedas, how he preached a similar doctrine to get people under the auspices and sets the foundation for Ramanujacharya and others for Vaishnava Dharma. And then finally he asks a question. And therefore, Prem Das Babaji answers this, that Prem is a reality. But it cannot be an eternal reality if the one who delights in praying is the one and the same as the object in praying. In other words, love requires an exchange. Somehow duality gets a negative name. The distinction gets a negative name because people have the conception of duality of separate interests. But there's a purer conception of non-duality. I was just speaking to Mahamuni on the phone today. We were just discussing some of these things. And it's very nice. We gave a nice example that if there's 20 people in the room, non-duality means that they're singing in harmony. It doesn't mean oblivion. That's a much more beautiful conception of non-duality, that there's a unity and a function of everything, that everything is functioning for the whole, for something greater than itself. But why do we think that non-dualism, and that's what he says. He said that's a misunderstanding of Shankaracharya's position, ultimately. There's a non-duality in function. We're all part of the same body. But it's a non-duality in the beauty of harmony, not non-duality in the beauty of oblivion, because oblivion is not beautiful. Even now, I mean, if you went to a garden and everything was white, there's red, there's white, there's yellow, they're one. They're one in the splash of color that creates a beautiful garden. But they're part of the same thing. They're part of the garden. So he explains this, and then he's becoming inspired by his guru because he's getting instructions, teachings, that he's getting teachings that appeal to his frame of reference, his understanding as it exists now, in a way that allows him to expand his understanding. Allows him to expand his understanding. And therefore, because that is the relationship, his faith is continually increasing. So he asked his teacher, "Can I change my garb?" And the teacher said, "That does not means, you know, the important thing is changing of consciousness, and changing of the clothes should be a reflection of the change of consciousness. It's not that the change of consciousness will reflect the change of clothes. And he gave the famous verse that Lord Chaitanya told Raghunath Das Goswami when he told him to go back to his home, don't become market to Vairagya, the renunciation of the monkey. You give up externally the monkey, it gives up externally. It lives in a tree, it just eats leaves. But internally, the consciousness is just how I can get sex life. So don't become like a monkey. You know, just wear a few clothes and live in a tree, but have such intense material desire. Rather change the desire first. And he understands this. He thanks his teacher. He explains how he's understood. But now he has another question, and you'll see the answer is very interesting. And the other question is, well, what about these other religions in different countries, the various dharmas? How can I regard them? Now that I'm a Vaishnava, how should I regard the various dharmas and other religions? So we'll read a little bit. Babaji Mahasai, that's Prem Das Babaji, says, O Mahatma, referring to sannyas, dharma is only one, not two or many. The jivas only have one dharma, and it is known as Vaishnava dharma. Vaishnava means to serve Vishnu, which means to serve God who is all-pervading. It's a generic name for God. So Vaishnava dharma means the dharma of serving God. He who loves God, his religion is perfect. Differences of language, country, or race cannot create differences in dharma. Because those are just material situations, but you're going to have to express the eternal through the temporary, or through a language, or through your dress. So there's so many things. It's not that I put on a dhoti and shave my head. I am a devotee. And I can see why these instructions are there. It's so easy to become attached to the externals. As the change that one has to undergo, rather than the change of consciousness. As I can see in my own life of 42 years on the path of bhakti, how all these issues came, both personally and collectively, and how all the misconceptions that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is bringing up rise. Jiva Dharma is the constitutional function of the jiva. People may give it different names, but they cannot create a different constitutional function. So religion is not a particular faith and a particular expression of those that faith in various external things. It's the nature of the soul. Religion is the nature of the soul. So you can have Vaishnav Dharma if you're in a religion that believes in God and you get some good teachings. People may give it different names, but they cannot create a different constitutional function. Yes, you may be Hindu, you may be Christian. You can give it different names, but the name does not make the religion. It just signifies what that religion is, which has something to do with the soul. So ridiculous that people say, oh, he's not religious because he has a different faith than me. That's not what religion is. Religion is the function of the soul. Whether people know it or not, that's who they are. Jiva Dharma is the unadulterated spiritual love that the infinitesimal entity has for the infinite entity. So what is our ultimate duty? It's the pure love that we have naturally for that which we are part of, and that which protects and nourishes us. It appears to become distorted in various mundane forms because the jivas possess different material natures. The people have different material natures, so it's expressed. The love of God is expressed in a different language. It's expressed in a different type of dress. And if you take that to be religion, you have distorted religion into a particular mundane form. That is why the name Vaishnava Dharma has been given to identify the pure form of Jiva Dharma. So what is the Dharma? It is to serve God. That's what a Vaishnava means, one who serves Vishnu. The degree of Vaishnava Dharma in any religion or Dharma is a measure of its purity. So the extent that that religion is focused on serving God, rather than, it's not that the externals are not important, but the externals are important in relationship to the service to God. And to the extent that they've been disconnected to that is the extent in which a particular religion has become impure. So Babaji Mahasai continues, some time ago in Sri Vrajadam, I submitted a question at the lotus feet of Sri Mahaprabhu's confidential associate, Sri Sanatana Goswami. Now, this is very interesting because the point was the degree of Vaishnava Dharma is the degree of its purity. So it's anyway, I asked him whether the word ishqa, I don't know how to pronounce it, in the Islamic tradition means unadulterated love or something else. Sanatana Goswami is a learned scholar of all the Shastra, and his erudition in the Arabic and Farsi language in particular knew no bounds. So of course, that's Sanatana Goswami. He was so learned. Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and other exalted spiritual preceptors were present in that assembly. Sanatana Goswami kindly answered my question as follows. So he's going to show Babaji Mahasai through this question that was asked Sanatana Goswami how in different religions people can embrace a mundane form of something and lose the sense of the real essence of the religion, which is love of God. So he says, yes, the word ishqa means love. Adherents of Islam do not use the word ishqa in relationship to the worship of Ishvara, but the word generally means love in the ordinary worldly sense. Islamic religious teachers have not been able to understand the true conception of the pure spiritual entity, or Shuddha Chid Vastu. This is evident from the poetical account of the devoted lovers Lala and Majnun, and from the great literary descriptions of Ishqa by the great poet Hafiz. They have referred to Ishqa either as physical love pertaining to the gross body, or as an emotional love in relation to the subtle body. Thus, they cannot have any experience of unadulterated divine praying towards Bhagavan. So he says when they talk about perfection, they talk about love. It has a mundane conception. It's not actually in relationship to God. I've never seen this type of praying described in any religious texts of the Muslim teachers. only seen it in the Vaishnav Shastras. The same is true of the Muslim word ru, which means soul or spirit. It does not seem that Muslim teachers have used the word ru to mean Shudajiva, the liberated soul. Rather, they have used the word ru in the sense of Buddhajiva, the soul beyond matter. He's saying that, at least his perception of the Muslim teachers at that time, where they didn't have a pure conception of the nature of the soul. I have not seen unadulterated love for Krishna taught in any other religion, whereas descriptions of Krishna prema are common throughout the teachings of Vaishnav Dharma. For example, Srimad Bhagavatam 112 describes Krishna prema very clearly in the statement, Projita Kaitavo Dharma, the highest truth, in which all deceitful religiosity is rejected. So, deceitful religiosity means when you perform something, some religious activity, for some material benefit or material gain. Therefore, that verse says, Dharma Prochita Kaita Votra Paramo Namatsaranam Sitam. That real Vaishnav Dharma, which is found in the Bhagavatam, is Nirmatsaranam Sitam. It's for devotees. And what are devotees? Nirmatsara. They don't have envy. And envy means the manifestation of envy is your competition or your objective. Your strong desire in the heart to be above others. It's so insidious. It's so deep within us. To be disturbed when we're not the best. Or to be disturbed when we're not greater than everyone. It's such a deep objective. And people, that's how they lead their lives. That's their objective. I want to have more control, more power, and I want to have, you know, some control. It's so powerful. Even if we don't have it, then we lament that we don't have it. So real religion is for devotees. And what's the symptom of devotees? They don't have this fruitive objective. Think about it. Are we just satisfied with love of God, even if no one knows that we have it? Are we satisfied with love of God, even if we don't receive an ounce of respect in this world? Are we satisfied with love of Godhead, if our reputation is ruined? What is our objective? The devotee's objective, his standing, his value system, is what's best, is what pleases God most. So he's saying, the Bhagavatam is very unique because it militantly keeps out any tinge of selfishness, any example of selfishness, any promotion of selfishness, any offer of material benefit. So he's saying that in other religions sometimes, even the analysis of their conceptions of what is God and what is the soul. You know, I remember my father used to work in Harlem, and there was one preacher there called Reverend Sam the Money Man. And you see a lot of this seeping into Christianity, that the goal is something with the body and the mind to be more rich and more famous, and that's God's mercy upon one. So So that's not real religion, because real religion has to do about loving God. When Sannyas Thakur heard this explanation from Babaji Maharaj, he immediately offered Dandavat Pranam to him. Paramahamsa Babaji then said, "O best of the Vaishnavas, I will now answer your second question." So what was the second question? So the very beginning, two questions were asked. The first one, if the jiva is infinitesimal, how is his eternal dharma full and pure? The second question is, and if the natural function of the jiva is formed at the time it is constituted, and how can that function be eternal? So this is the question. If we're created by God and our function is manifest at the time we're created, then how can it be eternal? So he says, please listen attentively. This is very, very subtle, but I think you'll appreciate it. So in answer to that question, how can the dharma be eternal if it is created, and if the soul is created at a particular time? And he says, Sannyas Thakur, carefully, listen attentively. And then he says, we use the word creation and formation in connection with the jiva, but this is a material context. The time that we experience is divided into three phases of past, present, and future. This is material time, Chadiyakal, which is connected with the material energy, Maya. In the spiritual domain, there is a spiritual time, Chitkala, which eternally exists in the present with no divisions of past and future. The jivas and Krishna exist in that spiritual time, so the jiva is eternal and ever existing. So it's a very interesting concept. We only see things in relationship to the oppression of time. But if you accept that there's a supreme absolute reality, then he is beyond time, which is inconceivable to us. Because in our experience, time and tide wait for no man. In our experience, time is so absolutely ruling. I can't conceive something beyond past, present. Right now, time is marching on, and everyone is under it. It seems to be absolute. So creation happens in relationship to time. And that's a material time. And God is not under that. So this is when your brain explodes. Because it makes sense, but you can't comprehend it within your own experience. Eternal time. God is not something that happened in the past. God is not something that has a future. God is now. And when we become in the mode of goodness and we absorb ourselves in the moment in God, we also transcend time. The functions of creation, formation, and falling take place under the influence of material time. They're used to describe the jiva after he is bound in this material world. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in another place said, you cannot describe the time and when the jiva came to this world by the dirt of words, because it doesn't extend to that realm. And therefore, he's going to say the real understanding happens when one enters that realm and has an experience of that realm. However, even though the jiva is infinitesimal, he is an eternal spiritual entity, and his fundamental constitution existed before he entered this material world. Since past and future do not exist in the spiritual world, whatever occurs within that spiritual time frame is eternally present. Therefore, in reality, the jiva and his constitutional function are both ever-present and eternal. I've explained all this to you in words, but you can only understand their true meaning to the extent that you have realized and experienced the unalloyed spiritual realm. I have just given you a glimpse. You should try to realize the meaning of what I said through spiritual meditation, chit-samadhi. You will not be able to understand these topics through mundane logic or by debate. The more you can free your faculty of experience from material bondage, the more you will be able to experience the spiritual realm. First, you should cultivate the realization of your Shuddha Sarup, your pure spiritual identity, and practice chanting Sri Krishna Nam purely. Then your spiritual function, Jiva Dharma, will be clearly revealed. So, if you want to understand these things, you have to experience these things, and you have to focus on these things and meditate on these things. Spiritual realization and experience cannot fully be purified by the Eightfold Yoga system, Astanga Yoga, or by cultivating knowledge of the all-pervading, featureless Brahman, Brahmagyan. The jiva can only manifest his eternal spiritual function, Nityasiddhan, by constantly cultivating activities directed for Krishna's pleasure. Because what is our disconnect? Our disconnect with reality and our part in reality, our disconnect is a matter of consciousness. It's a matter of not really wanting God and thus really not wanting ourselves as his servant. And therefore, by God's mercy, our consciousness is reflected on a particular field of activities that allows us to satisfy our desires not to be devotees. You should constantly practice chanting Hari Nam with great enthusiasm. Such practice is true spiritual culture. By chanting Hari Nam regularly, you will develop unprecedented attachment to Sri Nam within a short time, and you will directly experience the spiritual realm. Chanting Sri Hari Nam is the foremost of all the different limbs of bhakti, and it yields the quickest results. This is confirmed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Sri Krishna Das Kaviraj's magnificent work, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, until 470-90. Majanera Majay Krishna Navaviri Bhakti, Krishna Prema Krishna Diti, Dari Mahashakti, Tara Majay Sarva Shreshne Nama Sankirtan, Nira Aparade Nama Goya Paya Premadan. Of all the different types of spiritual practices, the nine forms of bhakti, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, etc. The nine forms of all practice, the nine are the best because they have tremendous power to deliver Krishna and Krishna praying. So that's hearing, chanting, remembering, humbly serving, praying, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, padasevanam, Acham, doing worship. These, they're the best because they have power. Of these nine practices, Nam Kirtan is the best And by chanting Sri Krishna Nam Kirtan without offense, one obtains the priceless treasure of praying. Mahatma, if you ask how to recognize a Vaishnava, I will tell you that a Vaishnava is someone who has given up all offenses. They chant Sri Krishna Nam with great feeling. There are three categories of Vaishnavas: the Kanishtha, the Neophyte, the Madhyam, the Intermediate, and the Uttama, the most exalted. A Kanishtha Vaishnav chants the name of Krishna occasionally, and a Madhyam Vaishnav chants the name of Krishna constantly. And an Uttam Vaishnava causes others to chant Srinam by his very presence. According to Mahaprabhu's instructions, we do not need any other criteria to discern who is a Vaishnava. Sannyas Thakur was deeply immersed in the nectar of Babaji Maharaj's instructions. They began to dance as he chanted Sri Krishna Nam. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. On that day, he experienced Ruchi taste Harinam. Offering prostrated obeisances unto the lotus feet of his guru, he prayed, Prabhu, O friend of the destitute, please bestow your mercy upon this wretched soul. Thus ends the second chapter of Jiva Dharma, entitled The Nitya Dharma, the Jiva is Pure and Everlasting. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Anybody like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Gordon Bhaktadas.
Hey, Bhagavan, Gordon, I got your letter. I'll answer it tomorrow. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for also. Anybody else there like to say hello? I constantly get letters. There's many, many people that are listening. Of course, on the classes, I know there are many people listening because I get the numbers, but also people that are downloading. So I thank you all for hearing. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, then we can end now. Lunch, a couple of things.